of the presentation this morning is Job Sabbath Conflict. And in your agenda, I'm going to read it for the tape purposes here so that it'll be on there, since they will not be receiving an agenda if they should request this tape. What does the Christian do who is confronted with a conflict between his or her job and keeping the Sabbath? The answer to this question is not so easily arrived at as we may have previously supposed. The reality of living in a non-Sabbath-keeping society is not lost on those charged with the responsibility of providing for a family in today's economy. Let us share thoughts and experiences in the light of applying the Sabbath principles to this conundrum, which is a fancy way of saying puzzle. The very first question that I was asked upon being visited by a Sabbath-keeping minister, now bear in mind I was 19 and I was excited. I had finally written off and requested a visit from something called Ambassador College. And it took three times before the minister arrived. Twice they called to cancel or to postpone visiting because of other conflicts. So twice my hopes were dashed to meet somebody from this way-off group in California, and I'm up in Detroit, Michigan. I just wanted to see a living human being, of someone who actually was living the things I was discovering in the Bible. I had been a Baptist and had been very steeped and active in the Baptist church. And so I wanted to get involved. When they came out, before they could get a word in edgewise, I was rattling on and on about this truth and, boy, excitement, where's the church? And I wasn't getting a response to that question, where is the church? Where do you meet? Where is it? Can I get there from here? Art McCarroll's first question to me was, do you work on the Sabbath? That was the first question. And that was revealing as I reflect back on it, because essentially what was being done was a screening process to determine, have you completely come out of sin? The next question, had I been married, probably would be, have you been divorced? And this is 25 years ago, you understand, and perhaps the questions are formed a little different, but essentially there was an attempt to screen the applicants for the church, and that's the best way of putting it, to eliminate the possibility of sin creeping into the congregation. And one of the areas of sin that we had to guard against in those days was anyone working on the Sabbath, because with this religious persuasion, there was an understanding that the Sabbath was very vital and very important. And that aspect of life has not changed one iota. It is very important. But as in the days of Christ, where a certain legalistic approach to things arose, there was very little understanding if a person, for instance, as the example was pointed out a few days ago, of being employed by the government delivering Coca-Cola to army installations around the community, people were required to show their loyalty and their application of the Sabbath principle by quitting a job, not because they were working on the Sabbath, but in fact they were delivering to a military operation. Couldn't do that. That kind of thinking, unfortunately, has caused some people great difficulty. There have been individuals who have had families to support, have been in critical situations, who were not even given a chance or time to make some adjustments, to make arrangements when it came to a conflict with their job and the Sabbath. Is it wrong, then, to work on the Sabbath? That kind of question is very misleading, because you would think there's an easy answer. Well, there is, just just like I ask it, is it wrong to work on the Sabbath? What would be some of your answers? We've got to get some involvement this morning. So, who's going to volunteer to be the first? And in a word, yes. See, I already have that here. Just like that, I said, a basic question with a basic answer, yes. But is there all there is to the question and the answer? After you say yes, then you have to say, well, why? Just like a child would say, well, why, Mommy? Why, Daddy? Why? Why is it wrong to work on the Sabbath? You immediately go to two very basic scriptures, Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5. Let's turn over to those and get the very basics of why it is wrong, and I use the word wrong in quotes, to work on the Sabbath, because we'll understand that later come some precedents, some mitigating circumstances, some explanations of the parameters of wrong and right. In Exodus 20, we all understand, here are listed the Ten Commandments, of which the fourth commandment is recited in verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Verse 9, 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but, verse 10, the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Eternal, your God. In it you shall not do any work, which is not explained. Any work. If you go by the scientific definition of what work is, lifting your arm is work. You know, swatting a fly, which later on the Pharisees and the Talmud came up where you can't even swat a fly. So we're dealing with words here that need explanation. But there is not an explanation given here to define work at all. It just says you're not to do any, whatever that work may be. Now, we must understand in the context of the Israelites coming out of Egypt and the kinds of work they were used to doing, where they had no control over when they were off and when they worked, where it was hard labor and that sort of thing. We understand in that context that there is a definition of work. But that definition may not be consistent with the lives of those in 20th century. But let's go on, and it tells who cannot, those within your sphere of influence, sons, daughters, manservant, maidservant, even the animals, or the visitor, the sojourner, which comes within your gates. And bear in mind, they had no gates when this statement was made. For 40 years, they didn't have a gate. They had some tents that they put up, tore down. They didn't get into the promised land for 40 years. So there are words and principles given here that really did not get full application until years later. But that's where the original statement is made. That we're not talking about Exodus 16 now that led up to this commandment and the things they were to do to prepare for God giving them the law from the mount. Let's turn to Deuteronomy 5 for the other statement. It's kind of this whole book is a recapitulation of the law, and Moses is preparing for his exodus from working with them, and he now gives them a recap. Verse 15. And remember that you, and this is in relationship to the Sabbath, verse 12, keep the Sabbath day to sanctify it, as the Lord your God has commanded you. And it goes on saying precisely the same things mentioned in Exodus 20. And verse 15, and remember that you were a servant. This is an additional statement that was not present in Exodus 20. You were a servant in the land of Egypt, and that the Eternal your God brought you out thence through a mighty hand by a stretched out arm. Therefore, the Eternal your God commands you to keep the Sabbath. You've worked for 7 days without rest. I've given you information about this Sabbath day. Remember how you used to labor, and you should really appreciate this day off. Now that's all great, and that's fine for the ex-slaves who had no control, who had nothing to do about when they worked. But now, how do we apply this to today in a non-Sabbath-keeping environment? If we would think more deeply about what God says to us about the Sabbath, we would shed many garments of restraint that bind our actions toward each other. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. I've communicated with some people, even from this area, who have had some concern about the impression they've gotten. They've been ex-worldwiders, and they've gotten impressions, and they may even be here today, I don't know. Impressions that, you can do anything on the Sabbath. That's the impression they've gotten from some of us who are veterans, shall we say. And they're concerned. They've come out of a restrictive environment into this liberty, and it seems as if there is not the holiness and the sanctity and the caring and the keeping of the Sabbath like perhaps we should. Now, perhaps there is error on both sides, because the Roman 14 principle tells us to be careful in our liberty, not to be offensive in our freedom. That's hard for us to do because, well, we're spiritual and we're mature, and therefore the weak brother should just understand and come along. That means I can drink whatever I want to, anytime I want to. I can do whatever I feel like doing because I'm spiritually mature. Well, it doesn't sound like it. That's why Romans 14 is there. But the weak brother, in fact, is weak, as Paul describes, and therefore care must be taken. They must mature, but in an environment that is sensitive to their comprehension. Well, we must look at how we, not them or they, but how we relate to the Sabbath keeping within what we control as individuals, not what someone else is doing, not someone else's area of responsibility. In a Sabbath keeping environment, there is pretty much surety. The person who doesn't keep it stands out like a sore thumb. But in a non-Sabbath-keeping environment, it becomes far more difficult to arrive at some comprehension. The most important point to ponder in pursuing an understanding of job-Sabbath conflicts is that we are responsible for our own actions, not anybody else's. Our own. We cannot legislate for someone else. As individuals, we are not priests. We are not Levites. We are not judges or any official that has the authority to make binding and leasing judgment for others. That's as individuals. We're not. Unfortunately, in the Christian environment, there is that avenue of judging, condemning. Well, I don't work on the Sabbath, and I gave up my job. This person is attending with us, and they work Friday nights. I don't know if that ought to be right. It's not our responsibility, because we don't always know the intent. We don't always know what's behind it. The only authority or the mechanism by which difficult judgments are made are given in Deuteronomy 17. You can turn there in verse 8. The Old Testament instance here. It says in verse 8, "If there arise a matter too hard for you in judgment, between blood and blood, between plea and plea, and between stroke and stroke, between matters of controversy within your gates, you shall arise and get you to a place where the Eternal your God shall choose, and find a decision." In the mechanism of the Church of God International, we've got a ministerial council, we've got local ministers, we have a means by which we can resolve some of those types of things. Hopefully it will be resolved at the grassroots level by mature Christians who know how to do that. That's an Old Testament point, you can read the rest of the verses giving the principle of resolving kinds of conflict. But in the New Testament, and we don't have to turn to it, Matthew 16, Matthew 18, the binding and loosing principle, which has been abused and perverted by a lot of people, ministers and churches all over the world. We make every effort not to do that, but the authority to do that was invested in the ministry, or the discipleship, or whatever you want to call it, from Peter, James, and John, and all of them, to deal within the law and the statutes, judgments came forth, or precedents were created, and the authority for resolving that was there. In the past, we have been very narrow, I think, in our worldwide experiences, those of us who've had those, and we've tried to liberate ourselves to a certain degree from that in the Church of God International. For today, we want to narrow our focus on this discussion, lest we wander into aspects about the Sabbath that are not germane to the job-Sabbath conflict. Job-Sabbath conflict. That's the narrow focus for today. Let me give you some what-ifs and see how you might respond to them. What if you had been employed, and some of you, I don't know how many of you have job-Sabbath conflicts, so I won't ask you to raise your hand. It might be embarrassing for you. Or how many of you, eventually some of you are going to tell me how you've handled it in the past, but I want to provide you with seven what-ifs and see how your mind responds to them. You are employed on a job where you have worked for a number of years, or maybe even just for a short period of time. But now you have come to the knowledge and the proof of the Sabbath. You've worked on the Saturday, it's Friday night, and that's just been your way, and then you come into this knowledge and understanding of the truth. What do you do? Quit. Some would say, quit the job. Well, that may be. If you got $50,000 set aside in the bank or something to tide you over till you get that new job, quit it. Is that wisdom? Think about it. Number two, you have been a Sabbath keeper for most of your adult life, but you now find yourself unemployed with a family to support, and a job possibility that requires occasional work on the Sabbath, once a month, once every 6 weeks, whatever it might be, just occasional. What do you do? Number three, you are employed on a job which you took knowing full well you would have to work on the Sabbath, but you did it, also knowing if you would not do it, you would be arrested for lack of child support by decree of the government and the courts. What do you do? Number four, you own a business that normally and traditionally operates on the Sabbath, like a fast foods business, a franchise, a convenience store, or a video store. What do you do? What do you do? How do you handle that instance regarding the Sabbath? Number five, you are a law enforcement officer, fireman, medical emergency practitioner, public works employee, on call during snow, electrical, or storm situations, or other acts of God. What do you do about job Sabbath conflict? Getting a picture of not so simple to decide. Number six, you are a mother of four children, single parent. You are the sole support of them, and you have a good paying job. There's no help from ex-husband or father of the children, And your job requires you to rotate your work at off days, sometimes causing you to work on the Sabbath, but not always. How do you handle it? I know of all of these cases, I know of people in these situations. This particular one is interesting because the lady makes $40,000 a year to walk around and look at dials at a paper factory, paper mill. And she has interviewed for job after job at lesser money, like $18,000. And the interviewers say, well, why would you want to give up $40,000 for $18,000? No, we won't hire you. Now, the option she has, of course, quit the job and go on welfare with four kids. Or what does she do? Number seven. Jobs are scarce in your town because it's a smaller community, especially for teenagers. And you want to listen to this one because you want to be counseling your teens or your grandkids, you know, about in this particular area. You would like to work at the local franchise or fast food place, you know, Mickey D's or whatever. You'd like to purchase some things that you both need and perhaps want. And it would help stretch the old family budget a bit to have you work at that little fast food place. But the only openings of a job overlaps the Sabbath on Friday evening in the winter and not the summer when days are longer. You got the job during the summer when school was out, and so you could work up to 7, 8, 9 o'clock during the summer. Now the fall comes and the winter comes, the days get shorter. What do you do with this job as a teen working with the side of conflict? I've given you those seven. We could have had six, we could have had 12, we could have had any number, and I didn't choose seven because of being a numerologist. But I just wanted to give you some examples of people in practical circumstances dealing with the issue in a non-Sabbath keeping environment in our 20th century, the latter part of the 20th century. What I hope that you've discovered is that each one of these situations is different and require different judgments. Turn with me to Numbers, the 15th chapter. We're going to go back to some of these because I want to get your response to them. Numbers 15, and we'll begin in verse 30. Because here's a situation where something happens with the Sabbath breaker, and this particular example has been cited and given to illustrate how important it is not to work on the Sabbath because it does break the Sabbath. But the soul that does aught presumptuously, which is an important word there, presumptuously, defiantly, with an intent to break the Sabbath, with a clear purpose of violating it, with full knowledge that it doesn't matter. I don't care what the law says. Whether he be born in the land or a stranger, the same reproach the eternal, reproaches the eternal. And that soul shall be cut off from among his people, because he has despised the word of the Lord and has broken his commandment, and that soul shall utterly be cut off. His iniquity shall be upon him. It's important. Because some of these categories or examples I cited, you may not find any intent, any willful purpose to break or violate the Sabbath. But you may find a necessity due to circumstances beyond their control. Acts of ignorance, acts of weakness, acts of necessity, even acts of stupidity, and particularly acts of defiance, all come under this umbrella of intent. Of intent. And verse 32 through 2 through 36, let's read, and when the children of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man that gathered sticks upon the Sabbath day. Now, everybody who gathered sticks on the Sabbath day was not killed. When there was cold and the heat, the fire needed to be lit to get warmth, was everybody who gathered a stick on the Sabbath killed? No. So it was more to it than just gathering sticks. What was he attempting to do? What was his intent? What was his motivation? Why did he do it? And they put him in the ward, verse 34, because it was not declared what should be done to him. And the Eternal said unto Moses, the man shall be surely put to death. All the congregation shall stone him with stones without the camp. And that is kind of an attitude that we carry over even to the 20th century about someone who we have judged to be a law violator. When it comes to us as a community believing certain things. Verse 36, and all the congregation brought him without the camp and stoned him with stones. And he died as the Eternal commanded Moses. And that principle was very harshly driven home through the worldwide experience. Now bear in mind, most of the people making the decisions about how far you should go on the Sabbath were individuals who never had a Sabbath conflict. Never had to deal with a job situation, ever. Stepped immediately out of Ambassador College into a pastorate with a leased car, a house, and a wife, and never had to deal with going to a boss, dealing with whatever the eccentricities of dealing with the job thing. Now, fortunate for me, I worked before I went out to work at Ambassador College, but I want to tell you, the environment of coming to Ambassador College and being employed there, off of the Sabbath, off of the holy days, smooth. Never a problem, not even, you could, no, it was so remote. And it was just lovely. Now, there were times that work was done on the Sabbath. In fact, everybody had to eat still. The student body still had to eat on the Sabbath. But they had volunteers come in. There were ways that people dealt with doing those works. The security force still was out there. Not the regular guys. They were off. But then volunteers came in and patrolled the grounds. Work was still being done, if that is the definition of work. If receiving a paycheck defines work, well, then they were safe. If that's the determinant, well, if you get some money, then that's work. Well, I don't know if those definitions are that easy. But my point is, there were individuals who made these rules who had no conflicts. I didn't have a conflict about the Sabbath until I left Pasadena in 79. And after I first went out, I was on the payroll for Church of God International for about a year and a half. And then after that, then reality came in. And ooh, it was rough. It was difficult. I don't know if you can guess which one of these examples I cited to you might be me. Well, it's number 3. It says you are in, no, not number 3. It's, Oh yes, this is number 3. You are employed on a job which you took knowing full well you would have to work on the Sabbath, but you did it also knowing you would be arrested if you did not make child support payments for governmental and judicial decrees. What do you do? That happened. I mean, the reality was staring me in the face with the sheriff's department standing there. Where's the money? We take you to jail. You go into jail if you don't make these payments. The judge didn't want to hear Sabbath. What? Are you crazy? Forget that. You better get a job or you're going to jail. I interviewed for a job working at a restaurant. It was just about a new restaurant was opening up, and I decided I was going to become a bartender because I could make some cash and I could make a salary, and you know, who knows, I had to get a job. Now, I was confronted with, okay, now the Sabbath is a situation here. Now, I don't know how this is going to work. I'm going to tell them up front about this, and let's see what happens. Let's get on the roller coaster and see how we ride this out. But I had to begin a process of eliminating myself from that situation. First of all, they had a request book for days off. So I could request, I need to be off Friday evening. Okay, I would get these honored. And then, and I never had to work Saturdays. I was a night employee, so Friday evenings were my main concern. And then I began looking around for another job whereby I could work days during the week and just work part-time at the restaurant. And this was a process evolving 3 years of dealing with this situation. And I want to tell you that God saw the intent, because he made it possible. I mean, I get the schedule sometimes and look and see, I was scheduled off on the Sabbath. I didn't even have to request it. It would just be in the schedule. We're talking about scores of employees. And I'd get it scheduled off. Well, that's just great. And the holy days would roll around. I mean, I'd be requesting off. And it was in the Jewish community. And some of the Jewish employees would note, well, why are you off on Yom Kippur? Well, I keep Yom Kippur. You do? You're fasting? Well, yeah, I'm fasting. It was amazing how it began to work for me. But I had to go through a process that if people had been judging me, and I wasn't yapping it up about it because I knew the church, I knew people, a minister with this conflict, a minister having to deal with this, and where is his faith? Where is his ability to make right judgments? How can he tell me anything? I quit my job. Well, I'm just telling you like it was, because it's a reality in the 20th century in a non-Sabbath keeping environment. It is a reality. Now, I have, even before I came to work, Don and Tyler, the second time, had successfully dealt with it. I started teaching school, and therefore it was Monday through Friday. No problem. And up until the time I came down, I just had good control of it. But I'm trying to share with you this idea that it was not easy. It was not so cut and dried. It was not so simple. It was not so mellow and gentle, that reality, as some have thought it to be. Now, if you have been one who have been so found it easy to just up and quit because you did have that nest egg to fall back on, great. I see a couple out here who I know have a business that they close on the Sabbath and have been blessed. I want them to share a little bit about that as we move on. I think they would fall into the category of you own your business that traditionally would operate on the Sabbath, like a fast food franchise, convenience store, video store, and how do you handle the Sabbath? Would you like to share a little bit of that with us? The Burgers, is it? The Daltons, I'm sorry. Just speak right out. You can, from where you're standing. And we were talking yesterday about it, and for the tape, the gentleman owns a video store that from the day one that they opened about 7 years ago, they were closed. And so as a result of their determination to do that, God has blessed them richly. I was confronted with an offer by my father, who is over in Atlanta. He's a barber, been a barber for 52 years. And when I was wrestling through this conflict of jobs and what am I going to do type of thing, and he knew about the child support arrangement and all that, he said, well, come on in the business, and when I retire you, I'll give you the business. You'll never have to ask anybody for anything else again. You'll be a barber. You'll have your own business. Come on in. And it was attractive. But I knew that my dad, who had had 50 years of barbering experience, was not going to close on Saturday. Forget that. That's the biggest day in the barber business. It's not going to work. So I had to wrestle with that, and I thought, no, Dad, I won't be able to do that. I've got some other things I need to do. I can't do it. It was attractive. I could have had my own business, because ultimately, I was going to close it on Saturday. I had big ideas of what I could do with that business. It was just going to be closed, period. But rather than get into conflict with him, I didn't take it. These circumstances that I've presented to you, latent within them or laced throughout them is this intent. Intent is crucial in arriving at an understanding. When you read in Nehemiah, the 13th chapter, the example of Nehemiah and Ezra dealing with the Sabbath problems of their day, where they had come back from captivity, and they now found themselves confronted with non-Sabbath keepers selling their wares outside the gates, or inside the gates, or outside the gates of Jerusalem. They had to arrive at a decision on what they were going to do to create the Sabbath-keeping environment. So in verse 15, it begins the process of purifying the city. In those days saw I Judah, some treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in sheaves, and lading asses, and as all also wine, grapes, and figs, and all manners of burdens which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day, and I testified against them in that day, wherein they sold victuals. Was it because they had to? No, we don't find necessity. We find just a way of doing business. Business is business, they say. And so they progress through it. There dwelt men of Tyre, outsiders, not even Jerusalemites, therein, who brought fish and all manner of wares and sold on the Sabbath unto the children of Judah and in Jerusalem. Just a nice mall. Nice shopping. Let's have a good old time. The intent was wrong. And that's what Nehemiah was going to be dealing with. Progressing on down. Then I contended with the nobles in verse 17 of Judah and said unto them, what evil thing is this that you have done and profaned the Sabbath day? Important to note that. He was dealing with the intent of this Sabbath operation. And of course we know the end result was that he put them out. It came to pass when the gates of Jerusalem began to be dark before the Sabbath, I commanded that the gates should be shut and charged that they should not open till after the Sabbath. And so, well, okay, we can't come into the city. We will put up our little shops outside the city. And eventually Nehemiah had to drive them away from there, from the wall, as you read down through to verse 22. An effort to deal, a judgment was made against the intent, the motivation of these people who wanted to make merchandise in the Sabbath day. Christ, in Mark, the second chapter, is confronted by the Pharisees of his day because of his view of the Sabbath, and probably, I have no question about it, had the best perspective on the Sabbath of anyone walking the earth. Verse 23, Mark 2, it came to pass that he went through the cornfields on the Sabbath day, and his disciples began, as they went, to pluck the ears of corn. The Pharisees said unto him, behold, why do you on the Sabbath day that which is not lawful? By whose definition? God defined the Sabbath to the ancient Israelites as they left captivity and told them not to do any work like you had been doing when you were in Egypt. Fair enough. Then gave examples, or the one example of the man who was out gathering sticks, even the example of trying to collect food on the Sabbath, the manna as it fell Friday, they went out to look to see if there was something on the Sabbath. He gave them these principles to judge how to deal with the issue. And now Christ is confronted with these Pharisees in some definition concocted by themselves on what could be done on the Sabbath and what could not. Christ's response is interesting. He said unto them, have you not heard what David did when he had need and was a hunger, he and they that were with him? Let's turn over to Matthew 12 to continue this story, because there is another element that's added. Matthew 12 and around verse 5. Well, continuing in verse 4. How he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat. It was not lawful. neither for them which were with him, but only for the priests. David did something that was not lawful, willing to suffer the consequences, because there are. We've already established from Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5, it's not lawful to work on the Sabbath. But note what happens in verse 5. Have you not read in the law how that on the Sabbath days, not only the weekly Sabbath, but the holy days as well, the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? Now, the ministry, of course, has explained this. That means for us. We're laboring on the Sabbath, preaching, working up a sweat. We're driving miles and miles and miles, and therefore we can do that because we're like the priests. But that's not what Christ was talking about. He was using these examples to illustrate to the Pharisees how intent is very important. The intention of a priest was to fulfill the law of the temple. Horse those bulls, slay those rams, slit the throats of the doves, and do all of that heavy labor that they had to do in the temple. Now, I would guess there may have been a priest or two, or Levite here and there, who had the wrong motivation somewhere. You know, like, oh, the sons of Eli, or the sons of Samuel, who were crooks and thieves that God had to kill. There were wrong motivations among them, but where there was right intention, God honored, God respected. And in so doing, these priests that Christ talks about were blameless. There is an occasion then where Christ gives a principle, continuing in verse 6, but I say unto you that in this place is one greater than the temple. But if you know what this means to the Pharisees and to us today, if you know what this means, I will have mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. My disciples were guiltless for eating this corn or these grains on the Sabbath. David was guiltless for going in and eating the showbread. The priests were guiltless because the intent was not there to willfully defame or defy God. But sometimes those circumstances, as the ancient Israelites in slavery, who had lost the knowledge of the Sabbath, was to survive. That's all. Is this then a sanction to willfully violate the Sabbath? Not on your life. It is wrong. It is definitely wrong. And you must do everything possible. As I mentioned, the lady with the four children, I called her last week as I was preparing this to talk and say, well, how are things going? How is the effort to get that new job? And I know she has moved. She lives in Louisiana, which is one of the most depressed states economically, than next to Oklahoma that I know of in the country. And she has a job paying her $40,000 to walk around and look at some dials to see that everything is working right. She hasn't lifted anything. She hasn't, you know, if that's work, I guess so. She gets a paycheck. And because of the rotating basis, this week she may work 4 days. She may work Monday through Thursday, 12 hours from midnight to midnight, midnight to noon. And then she'll be off 7 days. And then she'll go in for the swing shift and then work maybe 5 days there. Then she's off, and then she'll have to go and work the midnight shift. That's the way it works for her. And that's what she has to do. And has interviewed in Dallas, different places, for jobs where she can work Monday through Friday and keep the Sabbath, and they won't hire her because of this high salary she's getting. And they don't understand how a person would want to come down and take a lesser amount of money. They will not give her the job. What is the woman to do? She could quit, as I said, as I told her the other day. Of course, she could quit and go on welfare and become one of those welfare moms. Or could she? And what would God think about it? What would he want her to do? You answer the question. I want you to think deeply about it. Reading on further down, for the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. And then to really get to them in verse 9, on to the end of this chapter, to verse 13, he goes into one of their synagogues. I like the way that's put by Matthew. Goes into their religious community and heals. Well, they ask him, he sees a man with a withered hand. They ask him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days, that they might accuse him? And he said unto them, what man shall be among you, won't take care of business when it needs to be taken care of, like your sheep or some animals in distress? Or you go in and you take care of it. I mentioned one of the examples I mentioned about being employed in a situation. I know a man up in the Cleveland area who works for the city. He works as a street sanitation worker or one who a public work worker in the city of Lakewood outside of Cleveland. In the wintertime in Cleveland, you get a lot of snow, and it may decide to snow on the Sabbath. He's on call. What does he do? He's got 8 children. He used to work for white trucks till they moved out of Cleveland. And so he made like $12,000 a year as a street worker in Cleveland, the suburb of Cleveland. Quit, and your 8 children standing there looking at you. Yeah, Dad, good choice. What are you going to do? It's not easy. It's not simple. Along with intent comes good judgment. Good judgment. And that's what Christ was illustrating in these examples in Matthew 12. Good judgment. Verse 12, how much then is a man better than a sheep? Wherefore it is lawful to do well on the Sabbath days. And he stretched forth and healed the man. Was it work? According to the scientific definition, it was work. Any energy expended to accomplish a task is considered work by the scientific definition. And God never defines what work is. He just gives us principles. First of all, the law, the statutes that hang on the law, and then the precedents or the judgments that hang on them. They all have the weight of law, but as Christ says, if you knew what this meant, if you know what this means, I will have mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. Let us be careful when those come into our midst who find it difficult, find themselves in circumstances where they are trying to extricate themselves from breaking the Sabbath. Give them a chance to do that, because God does. The example of the man being killed for gathering the stones or gathering the sticks was because of his defiant attitude, his willful intent to violate the Sabbath for his own gain. And that's not the case with everyone who finds themselves in the 20th century dealing with the issue. The decision to rightly align ourselves with the Sabbath is ours alone, just as it is God's decision to forgive our sin. He alone knows our intent and whether we made good judgment.